Can I go to a movie with Riley tonight?
With Riley?
Your grandparents are coming for dinner tonight, remember?
Awesome. Grandpa telling his disgusting Vietnam stories.
Take my advice. Don't ever have kids.
Everything just revolves around you, doesn't it?
Yeah, whatever.
What is the rush today? It's like we're waiting for a buffet.
What's going on? Is that McKenna's mom?
Multiple reports are now coming in of parents murdering their own children.
Listen to me. We have to get out of the house before mom and dad come home.
Your right foot out! You do the hook! You hook in! You
don't. Yes. It's mommy. Mommy's here. Are you two all right? We're not coming out, okay? You have to leave.
You're going to open the door!
This is a really great idea, honey.
I forgot your parents.
That was tonight.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike Scriccio.
How you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing great. How are you, Mike?
I am great. You know what I'm doing, Mike? I'm very excited.
Yeah?
And the reason is it's a very exciting time in the podcast because it is here that we entered the year 2018.
My God.
That's right. We are now within 1 year of where we are right now. it's 2019 as of this recording. And so that means we're a year away from where we are. So there aren't a ton of Nicolas Cage movies left, although he didn't make it easy for us. Actually, Cage released 8 movies in 2018.
Wow.
Which is a lot. That's a lot of movies for one person to come out with in 1 year. It's the most Nicolas Cage has ever come out with in 1 year, actually. And so we're still going to be doing this podcast for at least a few more months, it seems.
Yeah. Hopefully he doesn't break the record in 2019 and we just have to keep doing more.
Just keeps doubling his output for the next several years, which I wouldn't put it past him to do. but the exciting thing about 2018 also is that it's the year that Nicolas Cage really came back in full force. Mandy was so successful that more theaters kept adding it, even though it was already on VOD. He finally got to fulfill his dreams of playing Superman in Teen Titans Go to the Movies. He played a hilarious supporting role in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and he signed on for films in the future from filmmakers like Richard Stanley and Cian Sono, meaning that the future is pretty bright for Nicolas Cage fans. And it all started with a VOD horror comedy that premiered a few months earlier at the Toronto International Film Festival, where it had a pretty positive reception there, and that is Brian Taylor's Mom and Dad. Now, this is one we've been looking forward to for a while now, right, Mike?
Yeah, I remember when this came out and us being, like, kind of hyped about it. Be like, oh, man, I can't wait till we get to this in 100 episodes.
But yeah.
I guess it was only last year, so it's not that far away.
Yeah, it wasn't that much. Also, we have not recorded 100 episodes of this podcast. But anyway.
Not with that attitude.
By the end of it, we probably will have.
Yep.
But this came out early last year, and around the time I was thinking, like, man, I would really like to watch this movie, but I figured we might as well just save it for the podcast. And it seemed like we were getting close. It seemed like it was like just around the corner, and it kind of was. But we still had to go through, like, 25 movies to get to it.
the other movie you were doing that with was Arsenal, because you had the Blu-ray. So
yes. This
was the better one to look forward to.
Yeah, well, Arsenal wasn't one I was, like, super excited to watch anyway. this was one
Don't try to rewrite history.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. all right, so Brian Taylor was the director of this movie, and he is one half of Neville Dean Taylor, the filmmaking duo behind movies like Crank and Gamer, but who listeners of this podcast will remember were the directing force behind Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance. Ghost Rider 2, baby.
Who could forget?
I mean, you were a fan of Ghost Rider 2, if I recall, Mike.
Yeah, probably. I don't really remember, but I'm going to believe you. It seems like a thing I would have liked.
I remember around that time we had like movies like Ghost Rider 2 and Drive Angry and Trespass and stuff like that, and there was a long stretch where you were just not enjoying anything.
Yeah, that's true.
And when Ghost Rider 2 came along, you were like, I actually had a lot of fun with this movie. And I was like, yes, like, there we go. So yeah, Ghost Rider 2 was directed by Neville Dean Taylor. This time, Taylor goes solo for Mom and Dad as he reunites with Cage. This is actually the first movie that he's made since Ghost Rider, although he also served as a director for several episodes of the sci-fi series Happy with Chris Maloney and Patton Oswalt, which I've never watched, but I've heard is pretty good and pretty insane, which... sounds about right. If that guy's involved with the show, like, yeah, that makes sense. Nicolas Cage stars as Brent Ryan in Mom and Dad, Mike, who is a father in a suburban family who becomes overcome with an intense desire to kill his children. Which, you know, sounds like a weird thing when you say it out loud like that. But it's not just him, though. Every parent in the world is suddenly trying to kill their kids, including Cage's wife, Kendall Ryan, played by Selma Blair, of course known for movies like Hellboy and Cruel Intentions. Their kids, Carly and Josh, are played by Ann Winters and Zachary Arthur. You'll recognize Ann Winters from 13 Reasons Why on Netflix, and Zachary Arthur from Transparent on Amazon Prime. Carly's boyfriend, Damon, is played by Robert T. Cunningham, and her best friend, Riley, is played by Olivia Krochikia. I definitely
nailed it. Nailed it.
That's how you pronounce it, along with the hesitation and everything. Mm-hmm. She actually played Dennis Leary's daughter on Rescue Me, also.
Wow.
Yeah. Is that a deep pull, Mike? Were you a rescue
that
fan?
Is. No, I was not.
Fair enough.
I think I was just too young when that was going on.
Fair enough. Rachel Melvin plays Jeannie, who is a Selma Blair's sister who gives birth to a baby during all this craziness. Soap opera fans might know her from her role on Days of Our Lives. And most awesomely, Lance Henriksen is in this movie, appearing as Nicolas Cage's father, Mel Ryan. Of course, he's iconic as Bishop from Aliens. He was in The Terminator. He had his own horror movie called Pumpkinhead, which I have seen, and it's it's wild. And finally, there's a few cameos peppered throughout the movie. Comic book writer Grant Morrison appears as an expert talking about what's going on TV. And I believe he actually also appeared in The Death of Superman Lives, What Happened, which we covered on this podcast a little while back, too.
Oh, yeah.
So there's that. Actor Bokeem Woodbine from Fargo Season 2 and Spider-Man Homecoming, he appears as a father on the news who killed his kid, and he was also in The Rock. So
that's right.
Cage reunion right there. He was the Rocket Man, I believe, in that movie.
I think he was, right.
I think he was. And finally, Dr. Oz is in this movie for some reason as himself. So there's that too. Anyway, Mom and Dad was written and directed by Brian Taylor and was released 7 years after Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. Now, Mom and Dad was a mostly VOD release, but was released in a few theaters in the U.S. on January 19th, 2018. And if you weren't seeing it, then you may have been seeing 12 Strong, which is a war movie with Chris Hemsworth and Michael Shannon. You could have seen Forever My Girl, which was a Nicholas Sparks knockoff starring Jessica Roth from the Happy Death Day movies. Or you could have seen Den of Thieves, which was a heist thriller starring Gerard Butler and 50 Cent that I heard was actually pretty decent, but I have not seen.
I've seen some of it.
Have you seen Den of Thieves?
I think it's part of it, like on HBO for like 20 minutes. It was like, yeah. This is that, and then just kept going.
Yeah, yeah. It was fun. I was looking at the movies that came out that weekend, and I was like, man, I don't remember any of these movies. And it came out like a year ago. Like,
it's January, though. That's a rough
They were
rough
January
month.
Releases. And I do remember Den of Thieves happening like around that time. I never saw it, but I remember Gerard Butler, and like I remember hearing like decent things about it. Never got around to it. The IMDb plot synopsis from Mom and Dad reads, a teenage girl and her little brother must survive a wild 24 hours during which a mass hysteria of unknown origins causes parents to turn violently on their kids. So, Mike, we were looking forward to this movie for a little while. Our friend Colin, producer of our other show, he was very excited to get us to talk about this movie because he's a big fan, right?
Yeah. He texted me a couple months ago and was like, oh, my God, I can't wait till you get to this, when he had just watched it.
Right.
And when I texted him that I was sitting down to watch it, he was all hyped. Yeah, so this has got a fan base, you know,
nice.
This movie?
Yeah, no, definitely. It has a cult following. I think anything with the Neville Dean Taylor name kind of has that cult following along with it.
Yeah.
Even if this one's Taylor solo without Neville Dean. Neville Dean also directed some solo stuff, too, and I'm completely blanking on what it was. I think it was a horror movie in, like, 2015. all that out of the way, what are your overall thoughts on Mom and Dad?
Overall thoughts on Mom and Dad is that this movie is just a fucking blast, dude. I had so much fun with this movie. It's bonkers. It's balls to the wall. I'm sure we talked about this with Ghost Rider 2. It's just got that, like, insane style that it commits to the whole time, and yep. we're going to do it. And it's just like Crank, and it's just like all those movies. There's a scene, because I didn't realize it was the same director as that it was that guy. And there's a scene where I think it's just the son, like, playing and running down the hallway, and he's like, you know, like, woo, with a fake plane and stuff. Yeah. But he's being, like, chased with that, like roller skates steady cam thing they do
right.
in all their yes. movies. And I was like, this has to be the guy from Crank, right? and I Googled it and was like, yep, okay, yeah. I'm glad.
Yeah. It's the sign of a true auteur, where you can watch a movie without knowing that it's them and just guess that it's them just from the, yeah. from the moment you started watching.
Yeah, and it's just balls-to-the-wall, insane horror comedy kind of thing. And I just had a lot of fun. It was so refreshing to see, like, this kind of genre movie that fits the Bonkers Cage, but isn't, like, exploiting Bonkers Cage, if that makes sense. It just, like, feels natural in some way, which is in this movie about parents trying to kill all their kids, which is weird. Yeah, it's just a lot of fun, basically. And, like, cool. That's all you can ask for in this late era Cage, you know?
Fair enough, yeah. I also enjoyed Mom and Dad. I had a lot of fun with it. It's loud. It's in your face. It's funny. It's gross. And it's also 83 minutes, and it never outstays its welcome, which I appreciate.
Oh, man.
You
know, I think that gets an extra star just for that.
Yeah, well, honestly, like, if this movie had kept that, like, its same energy level for, like, 2 hours, I think I probably would have disliked it by the end of it. But because it's 83 minutes, like, it's in and out, like, you're done. And honestly, it feels, like, a little abrupt. It leaves you wanting more, I think.
Yeah.
Which is what I appreciate about it.
I think if Army of One had been this short, we would have loved it.
That's a good point. Yeah, because I was all hyped. I was ready to love Army of One, and then it's just constant. It's grating after a while. Man, that movie.
I'm sorry to bring up bad memories.
Yeah, no, I mean, I overall enjoyed Army of One, but it's just definitely like one that like really wears you down after a while.
Yeah.
Whereas this movie, yeah, 83 minutes long, like it kind of escalates in the insanity, so it doesn't start off like at 100 right away, like Army of One does.
Right.
you know, it kind of gradually builds, and then by the halfway mark, it's like, all right, we're at 100. We're going to stay at this length for this level for the entire rest of the movie, but the movie's over in like 40 minutes, so you're good.
Yeah.
You're done. So yeah, had a blast with Mom and Dad. I think it was really fun, and I think also behind all the ridiculous, over the top horror comedy violence stuff that's going on, the movie does tap into the sort of like suburban malaise that anchors a movie like American Beauty or something yeah. like that. Like the idea of having kids and having them be your entire world, but feeling unfulfilled for that reason. I think it's actually pretty good at exploring that idea.
Yeah. There's like some Stepford Wives thing going on.
Yes.
Not like literally, but like that kind of, yeah, like you said, that suburban malaise, which
right.
a very poetic way to put it, Mike.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And Brian Taylor just really lets loose with the camera work and stuff like this with this one. And I don't think it's as insane as something like Crank, which is like the be all end all, like just fucking absolutely yeah. nuts. Crank, and especially Crank 2, actually, Crank High Voltage, which, whew, boy. but I think it's at least operating on Ghost Rider level. I think probably even a little wilder than Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance was allowed yeah. to be, because that was like a PG-13 superhero movie, so it had to fit within certain parameters, whereas this, like, it's an R-rated VOD release. Let's let Nicolas Cage go nuts and see what happens. Lots of sudden cutaways, some very jarring sound design, weird camera angles, that rollerblade cam, all that stuff. all that good Neville Dean Taylor stuff that you appreciate in this movie.
Yeah, yeah, and it fit in nicely with my weekend of bizarre movies, where I watched a bunch of, like, weird, like, I watched Ready or Not, which, you know, is great. I watched Get My Gun, which is, like, a grindhouse thing, like, a revenge story. I watched Mayhem, which is another revenge, which is actually, oddly, very, very similar to this, where there's, like, a biological, chemical thing that goes on.
Oh,
and
yeah.
makes everyone lose their, like, social inhibitions, and they just become filled with, like, stress rage hormones or whatever. So it's just
right.
people fighting in an office building for an hour, which is like a lot of like this, where it's just like, oh, well, all of a sudden we're gonna kill everybody
pretty much.
So yeah, fit in like that. It was just like a fun little weekend of like exploitation violence movies.
Yeah.
And like, hey, every time sometimes you need that, you know.
Yeah, totally. And this was like the cherry on top of all. Was this like yeah. the last one you watched?
It was, yeah, it's the last one.
There you go. So Mom and Dad, we enjoyed it. And of course, Nicolas Cage, the star of the film, sort of the star of the film. Like, he's top billing, him and Selma Blair. I feel like the kids are the real star of the movie.
Yeah.
Because they're like the main characters, they're the ones who are trying to get away. So Nicolas Cage, I think, is more of a supporting role, at least for the first half of the movie. And then, like, in the second half, he really gets to let loose. What did you think of Nicolas Cage in Mom and Dad, Mike?
I think this is the natural progression of his.
You have not pulled out that line in a while, I gotta say.
In a while, but it kind of fits in this one, where, like, it's kind of, it's a director, that he's worked with before, but one that is, like, is totally keyed in on what Cage's career is in 2018,
right.
Or 17, when they film it, or whatever, where it's like, okay, we kind of got this weird meme-y, out-of-control thing, let's do it. And they go full in, and you can tell, they kind of probably just told him, like, do whatever you want. Like, just, we got a script, but just, like, read it however. Because there's a lot of our favorite thing with the funny line readings and stuff.
Oh, yes.
But, yeah, it's great. I think he does a great job. It's a lot of fun.
Brian and I are, can I be very bold? I'm his Mifune, he's my Kurosawa. That's how I feel about him. And I trust him, and he lets me go. And he knows exactly how to use me. And Brian knows how to let me loose, and he knows how to bring me back in. He knows when I'm in control, when I'm out of control, and when I'm in control being out of control. And he designed this, so I'm in his world, I'm in his vision. I read the script right away and I said I'm in, because I know what he's gonna get.
Directing Nick is like directing the weather. He's like Hurricane Jose. All right, you can't change it. You can only wear the right clothing and hope that you don't get destroyed by it.
Yeah, I think he's great in this movie, too. He gets to do his nutso Cage thing, and he's having a blast doing it, especially by Act 3. When you get to, like, the last third of the movie, when it's him and Selma Blair going full tilt crazy, I think that's when the movie, like, is really, it's like, really firing on all cylinders at that point. Leading up to that, there's, like, a lot of fun Cage moments, but, like, once those two are, like, in sync and working together, because for a long time, the movie, like, holds off on Selma Blair being, like, taken in by this virus or whatever.
Right.
Like, she is able to avoid it up until she, like, gets home and sees her kids, and then suddenly she goes into her crazy mom and dad rage type thing. But then, you know, at that point, when it's them working together trying to kill the kids, like, that sounds weird to say, but it's just so much fun. You know, it's...
One of the thing I really appreciate is that, like, yes, the kids are the protagonists, like, they're the main characters.
Yeah.
But with Mom and Dad, we, like, actually spend, like, kind of a lot of time with them planning to kill the kids, which is, like, hilarious. And it's, like, wholesome. They're like, oh, I love you, honey. And, like, okay, you go run this hose from the gas line to the basement window. And they're like, you're doing great. This is a great idea. Like, it's so weird. But it's a blast because it just buys into the premise and, like, this is what it is. It like, has a wink to the camera, but it's not making fun of the situation, you know, in some weird way.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Now, how do you think this role fits into the roles that we've seen Nicolas Cage play in other movies, Mike?
It's been so long, I forgot that this is where I say it's the natural evolution of Cage's performances thus far. But, yeah, I mean, he's a parent. He's a dad.
Sure.
That's a big one for us lately.
Yeah, that has been. In a very different context, I think, in this movie than in most of the other Nicolas Cage dad movies.
Yeah. Is it one of the few, like, straight-ahead horror movies we've... I mean, I guess it's not a straight-ahead horror movie, but horror-tinted movie?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about that. We've seen Cage, like, kind of really embrace horror and, like, horror elements over the last decade or so. With movies like Season of the Witch or Drive Angry. Pay the Ghost, I think, is the real, like, straight horror movie that he made. But I think it kind of fits into the same mold as those movies, for sure.
So that's interesting. I mean, it makes sense, you know, kind of at the end of, towards, you know, well, I don't want to say the end of his career, but late period of his career, right. You know, kind of embracing the genre and stuff like that. I don't know. What about you, Mike? What do you got?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think it definitely carries over some of the kinetic energy left over from a Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, you know, the Cage Taylor collaboration, for sure. But honestly, I think if you removed all of the actual murder elements of the movie...
Took the whole plot out.
If you remove all of that stuff, I think this is not too far off base from something like The Family Man or The Weatherman, you know, those movies where it's like Cage kind of having a midlife crisis, not really sure what he's doing with his life. Or, like, bonding with his kids or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, to me, like, Mom and Dad, like, almost feels like if his character from either of those movies just snapped, especially the Weatherman. If his character just snapped and went off the rails, that's what this movie is. That's what Mom and Dad is.
Yeah, you're 100% right. If he just got really into coke and went insane, it's this movie.
So you mean like 90% of other Cage movies? Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, exactly.
Is Arsenal, is what you're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so what are the moments or scenes in Mom and Dad that stood out to you, Mike?
So one of the things I texted Colin about, producer Colin, is so before the credits, before even the opening credits, before there's a title, anything, we see a mom look back at her child in a car seat, put the car in park and walk away, and then we pull back outside the car and it's parked on train tracks and a train hits it.
Yeah.
And it was like, I'm gonna love this movie. It's the worst reaction to possibly have. I was like, yes, here we go. I just watched Green Inferno and it was awful. I need a good movie. And boom, it's that.
Yeah.
It's, the first 20 seconds of this are better than all of Green Inferno, anyone wondering.
Fair enough.
But yeah, like that, I mean, that sets the tone for the whole movie. I don't know what more you need, really. Well, yeah, we could have just cut to credits.
It could have just been a 20-second movie, five stars, that's it. And there's so many things like that. There's like so many just bonkers like kills that happen in the movie. There's one moment where Selma Blair is driving her car and a woman like pushes her stroller in front of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, Jesus Christ. And so like she swerves out of the way and like the stroller doesn't get hit, I think. I think
she avoids it.
She avoids the stroller, but I'm sure that baby is not going to be surviving.
Not great.
No. Based on the trajectory for the rest of this movie.
I mean, speaking of babies, the birth scene is out of fucking control.
Yeah, so of course Selma Blair's sister is pregnant when this movie starts, and they keep talking about like, oh, she's gonna have a baby any day now, and then it starts to happen while all this shit is going down. So they rush her to the hospital and she's fine, and she's like, oh, you'll take care of the baby if something goes wrong, like yeah, everything like that. And then she has birthed the baby, and then the woman who just gave birth to the baby, her sister Jeannie, is like holding the baby and just starts like trying to crush it.
Yeah.
And it's this very intense scene where like everybody's like, what are you like, okay, you're squeezing too hard, what are you doing? And then they like have to fight her off, and it's wild, man. It's wild.
Yeah. And I think it's such an interesting thing too with this movie where it's only specifically your own children that you want to kill. So like they actively fight that mother and like save the baby and then go home and murder their own children. Or try to, at least.
Yes, exactly. It's pretty wild. Yeah. I wanted to mention the scene that I had heard about before I saw the movie. I had heard about the scene, you know, the reviews for this movie came out in 2018 or whatever, and I read a couple of them. I think it was Matt Singer from Screen Crush who actually wrote a review and actually tweeted this out in his review, that Mom and Dad is a movie in which Nicolas Cage smashes a pool table while singing the Hokey Pokey. And when he described it, I was like, oh, that's going to be the most insane scene in the movie. That's going to be nuts. And honestly, when I watched it, like, it's wild. It's an enjoyable scene. It's very weird to just describe it, you know? Like, just to describe that scene.
Oh, yeah! You put your right foot in. You take your right foot out. You do the hokey and you f***ing it all out.
And stop.
And you do the hokey pokey, and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about. There you go. Problem solved. You're right, honey. I hate pool.
But it's honestly, like, arguably the emotional crux of the film.
It really is.
Because that's the scene where it's a flashback to, like, 3 weeks ago. Before all this shit is going down, Nicolas Cage decides to like build himself a man cave in the basement. So he builds a pool table. Selma Blair comes down, and she's like, "What are you doing? Like, you did this without consulting me," and that kind of thing. And Cage just snaps, goes into a rage, and starts smashing the pool table with a pool cue. This is before any of the the weird virus stuff going around. So this is just Cage and his own rage issues that he's dealing with in this scene. And so to me, like that almost makes that moment feel like actually scary. As opposed to the rest of the movie, which is like this, like, you know, kind of crazy, like, ah, I'm Nicolas Cage, I'm shouting and everything. Even though this is a scene in which Nicolas Cage is singing the Hokey Pokey while he smashes a pool table with the pool cue and like destroys it, Like, it makes it feel actually, like, intimidating because it's not part of all the stuff that you've been watching up to this point. Like, this is just Cage and his unchecked rage issues. And then they kind of have this scene where they kind of, like, cool down and they have this, like, kind of heart-to-heart together where they're like, yeah, you know, we thought our kids would be our entire lives and everything, or we thought we were going to be okay. Like, Cage was making, like, $145,000 a year, and now he's making $45,000 a year, and they're just unsatisfied with their lives as of right now. And I feel like that whole sequence, like, Cage going insane and then Selma Blair's, like, monologue right afterwards, to me was, like, that's, like, the centerpiece of the movie almost. And it's not nearly as insane as I thought it was going to be, but it's still, like, insane, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it was very weird. The one thing I thought about was that it reminded me of A Clockwork Orange and the rape scene where they're singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
There's that behind-the-scenes story where Kubrick, like, told Malcolm McDowell, like, we need something weirder, like, sing a song. And that was just the song Malcolm McDowell knew, so he sang it.
Oh, yeah.
And that made me think of this, where like, was Taylor just like, I don't know, sing a song or whatever to Nick Cage, and he just sang Pokey Pokey.
Right. It's hard to believe that song was in the script for the movie, if, like, that was...
Right?
Yeah.
I imagined him, like, starting to sing a song, and then Taylor being like, no, something from the public domain. And then he just did Pokey Pokey. But the scene is amazing, though.
No, it's nuts.
It really is just Cage destroying a pool table while singing the Hokey Pokey.
Yeah, but it's a great performance from him. It's a great performance from Selma Blair. They're both great in that scene. And again, like, you know, Oscar caliber stuff, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
In Mom and Dad. not where you would expect it to be, but it is there.
Yeah, it's there.
For sure. I also really love the scene where the parents are bum-rushing the school, like, earlier on in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Fucking Evan.
Yeah, that's when, like, you know, the thing, like, really gets out of hand, and, like, there's, like, cops, and they're just, like, trying to hold them off, but then other cops are, like, just running to get their own kids from the school, and attacking them. There's one moment where this, like, one parent, like, grabs a garbage bag out of the can and just, like, starts suffocating his kid, and it's like, holy shit! It's nuts. And then, you know, just the way it all happens, it feels like a zombie movie. And then even Riley, Ann Winter's friend, says, like, World War Z just broke out at a school. Like, we gotta go home or something like that.
Yeah, this movie has a couple. I think they have some references like that, which is pretty fun. But yeah, definitely that section. And then when they're in the neighborhood and the boyfriend is at the school, at the test or whatever he's taking.
Yes.
And he looks out the window and all the parents are, like, up against the window, like, zombies and stuff. It's like, what is going on? Like, just before stuff, like, really goes crazy.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely playing with some zombie imagery there. Which, by the way, speaking of tests, and this was just, like, a weird thing for me. But, like, there's one point where they mentioned he's taking the PSAT.
I thought that's what they said.
They mentioned he's taking the PSAT, and then they were like, oh, but this is a really important test. Like, what are you going to do? And I was thinking to myself, like, the PSAT is not that important. Like, what? The SAT is important. The PSAT you take because you're doing the SAT later. That's not the PSAT. Yeah. You can fail, nothing happens to you.
It's the practice SAT.
But they act like it's the most important test of his life. But they say it, like, directly. It's the PSAT, and that's, like, that really threw me off for a minute, honestly.
Yeah, there's the scene. Yeah, so they say that, and then when he goes to hand in the test, the proctor's like, "Are you sure you're done so early? Like, this determines your future."
Right.
And I was like, I thought I misremembered it. I was like, maybe it was, like, an LSAT or something, like, the one for law school or something. It's like, it can't be the PSAT.
Or maybe I should have studied harder for my PSAT. That
might be it, yeah. It's probably, that might explain a lot.
It probably does. That's why we're here hosting a Nicolas Cage podcast.
We're doing it for the people, Mike.
Exactly.
That's why.
Yeah, so they can pass their CSAT, their Cage Standardized Aptitude Test.
I hope you've been studying. There's going to be a quiz at the end of the podcast.
Exactly.
Just so everyone knows.
Yeah. Also, wanted to quickly mention one of my favorite things about the movie is just that every once in a while, it'll just have a quick flashback to a young Nicolas Cage doing donuts in a sports car with a topless chick on top of him. And every time that happened, I was like, man, this is cinema. Like, this is...
That honestly was my first tip that it was the guy from Crank. And then...
Yeah,
the second one was the roller skate Steadicam thing.
Right. Yeah, like, just when that happened, I was like, yeah, this is a Brian Taylor thing. This is what's going on.
But I love it, too. The first time it happens, it's like Cage goes out to his, like, family sedan.
Yeah.
And he, like, unlocks the car, and then it's just, like, smash cut to him, like, well, not him, but, like, a young guy in, like, a Thunderbird doing donuts. It was great.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if that was actually Nicolas Cage or not in that scene. I think I guess it was a younger actor, but he looked a lot like Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Like, maybe it was his son, Weston, or something. I don't know. But it's possible. But anyway, yeah, that was that was just really fun to just... Because it cut back to that a couple of times, and every time I was like, yeah, here we go. but it also like kind of serves that larger theme that I was talking about in the Hokey Pokey scene, where he's like kind of reminiscing about his younger and more wild and carefree days before he had kids, before he got tied down. And I that's like the symbolic nature of that, but it's also just the most ridiculous shit. Like, it's just, you know, it's Nicolas Cage doing sports, like donuts in a sports car with a chick on top of him. It's great. It's yeah, what you want.
What more do you need?
It's what you want to see in movies, right? But then he has that scene towards the end. There's a flashback to Cage talking to his son, because his son like accidentally like broke something in the car, spilled something in the car, something like that. And Cage is Cage, like, you know, makes out with them, and like it's a flashback to like them sharing ice cream, sitting on the sidewalk, and Cage is like telling him the story of the fiber and all the sex he used to have in it.
Yeah, that, I was really glad you brought that up, because I feel like we might need to just play that clip.
If I can find that clip, definitely, I will try to. But it's one of those things where, you know, because it's a relatively recent movie, there's not as many clips available on YouTube and stuff like that. So,
fair.
But if I can find it, I will play it. That is my promise to you, this podcast audience, that it will play right now.
If you found it.
If I found it. If I didn't, then sorry, that was just blank audio for 5 seconds.
But that has one of my favorite moments at the end, or at the end of that speech. Cage, like, licks the beer can. Did you notice? Do you remember that? Did you notice that?
Yes, I did.
It felt like they filmed that last and didn't tell Cage that it was like supposed to be a flashback to the pre-crazy, because he's insane in that clip. And then he's just like, he just like licks the side of the can real quick, like while he's talking. I was like, what is happening?
Yes, and there's a great button to the end of that where it's like, by the way, if you ever touch the car again, I'll fucking kill you. Yeah. Which was pretty great. Also, great Cage moment at one point where they're the kids are trapped in the basement, and Selma Blair's like, you know, right up on the door, and she's telling them like, hey, you need to get out of the basement so we can kill you.
The Brian De Palma split screen that goes on.
Yeah, exactly. Selma Blair's like right up against the door, and then Cage just like starts charges at the door and just pounding on it and just screaming like, you're going to open the motherfucking door. That great. And then as soon as he screams it, he just immediately starts sobbing. Yeah. and falls to the ground, like collapsing.
Your motherfucking mother should open the door. And motherfuckers, you're going to open this motherfucking door.
Not so helpful.
I think we really need to highlight too the intergenerational chase scene that happens.
Oh yes,
which pays off in such a great fucking way. In the first 10 minutes of the movie, Selma Blair's like, "Don't forget, your parents are coming over for dinner to Nick Cage," and then an hour of bloodshed later, the doorbell rings, and then you're like, "Yes, I forgot."
Exactly. Yeah, the grandparents show up, and as soon as they show up, they immediately try to kill Nicolas Cage.
They just stab him a bunch.
And just the sight of Nicolas Cage chasing his kid while Lance Henriksen is chasing Nicolas Cage. It's great. It's amazing. It's just a beautiful sight to behold. And the way they kill the grandparents, like they just like kill him with the car and everything. It's delightful. It's very much just, man, again, that's cinema right there.
Peak cinema. We don't need to make any more movies. We did it all.
Yeah, we really topped it all with Mom and Dad right there. yeah, that was great, you know, with the grandparents. And like, I just love seeing Lance. Like, Lance Henriksen doesn't appear in a ton of movies anymore, so when he does, it's like, oh, shit, it's Lance Henriksen. This is great. So that was cool to see.
This is the one.
Yeah, and, like, while that's all going on, Selma Blair is in a knife fight with the grandma and everything, and it's so good. But, yeah, also other stuff in the movie. I really loved the recurring bit about the Sawzall. It's called the Sawzall because it saws all, and,
I love how it becomes a menacing thing that they say.
Yes.
Like, at the end.
Right. Like, it's at first, it's like a dumb thing. Like, well, yeah, it's a sawzall. It's supposed to saw all, right? And then it just becomes their thing.
Yeah. And I do love the boyfriend, too, especially because he spends, like, a good third of the movie unconscious on the floor.
There are three or four moments in this movie where he suddenly shows up to save the day. It seems like he dies every time. And then, 20 minutes later, he pops up and, like, saves them again. And then he, like, immediately gets knocked out again. It's like, oh, well, I guess he's dead now. Nope, he's back. It was great. He has a great line, too, when they trap Selma Blair in the closet.
Yeah, he says, I guess my parents being divorced doubles my chance of survival. Which is great. It's so great.
Right. Yes, that was awesome. And he is one of the first, like, big parent scenes, too, with his dad. When he shows up at the house and his dad's trying to kill him, and his dad, like, ends up killing his dad with, like, the broken beer bottle and everything, and it's like, oh, shit, this is happening.
Yeah, and it's gory, too. It's very violent.
Oh, this movie is very gory. It's a very gory, very violent movie. I also really love when Riley dies, the best friend character. Right. Because they go back to Riley's house, and, like, there's one point where, you know, Anne Winters, like, leaves, and, like, she comes back, and she's, like, not sure what's going on, and Riley, like, she goes upstairs, and Riley's, like, dead, and her mom's just, like, there, like, oh, hey, how's it going?
Like, yeah, like choking her out, and it's just like, oh hey,
right?
Like,
yes.
And there's a great like musical sting earlier when Riley's in the kitchen, and there's like a blender. And
yes.
She reaches into the blender very slowly, and the music swells, and then nothing happens.
Nothing happens.
It's like, oh, that was great.
Yes. Oh, when they get back to their own house, what's her name? Carly. When Carly shows up to try to save Josh, and the housekeeper's there, and like she's just like. Like, then you kind of, like, turn the corner, and there's just, like, this pool of blood from where the housekeeper's daughter was killed before this happens. And then later on, Selma Blair's, like, walking around, and she, like, looks in the garbage cans, and, like, the daughter is there. Yeah. And she's, like, totally nonplussed by it. She's like, oh, yeah, I guess so. She must have killed Lisa in the end.
Right.
Man.
What a great movie. A lot of family deaths, and who more do we need?
Family deaths and child murder, and it's just wholesome entertainment, you know? It's really, really nice.
Yes. I just remembered the gun. So the Nick Cage has a gun in his midlife crisis, and the son steals it.
Right.
And shoots Selma Blair.
Yes. And the combination to the lock was his son's birthday, so he just guess it really quick.
Yeah, and then we flash back to him basically doing the, like, you talking to me scene, but, like, in his tidy whities and he's 8 or whatever. It's amazing.
Yes, that was so good. Yeah, otherwise, I mean, the ending. What did you think of the ending? Because it happened, it's very abrupt, I think. Like, the way it ends. I get it. It was, like, a joke. I get it. Because, like, you know, it was like the kids finally get the one-up on Cage and Blair. They're tied down. And it seems like at first that they might be cured, and then they're not, obviously.
Right.
And at one point, some of us like, you know, we trust you. But Cage's like, but sometimes we just want to cut the credits.
Yeah. I wish I knew what he was going to say.
I mean, I think he was going to say, we just want to kill you.
Yeah, fair.
Okay. but you know, it's a pretty funny gag. But I just felt like, man, again, 83 minutes. I'm glad it was in and out without overstaying its welcome. But like, I kind of wish like there was just a little bit more, just like slightly more, because it really does not explore anything about how this thing happened, and it doesn't need to.
But it
doesn't explain how this thing happened or what exactly it was. It was kind of like, honestly, the movie it reminded me the most of, and it's a movie that also came out in 2018, was Bird Box. which, you know, in Bird Box, that's a movie where if somebody sees the thing, that immediately makes them try to kill themselves.
Right.
But in this movie, if somebody hears like a weird, like staticky sound, there's like a staticky sound that plays, and that's what like triggers the thing in the parents. When they hear that, that's what makes them want to kill their kids. So it's like, it's a very similar like concept to Bird Box, I think, honestly. Although this movie came first. So Bird Box is a ripoff of this movie in addition to being a ripoff of The Happening.
Yeah, that's definitely what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess you could add some layer of critique of devices, because it's always like a TV or something that goes to static that makes them want to kill their children.
Right.
But like, I don't know. Does this movie need to have a deeper meaning? I don't think so.
Well, I think it does. I think it does have, like, you know, that, like I said, that suburban malaise thing that, like, you know, I think there's like more interesting thematic territory than you would expect a movie like this to have. I think, you know, like you just mentioned, you watched The Green Inferno this weekend, and I'm guessing The Green Inferno didn't have an analysis about what your life would be like without kids, kind of thing. You know, like what?
No, in fact, it had the analysis about don't be an activist. It seemed to be coming down on saying, which is very weird. Okay. Like, make a point of you dumb hipsters caring about the environment. We're going to go give you, you fed to cannibals because of that. It's like, uh-oh. All right, thanks, Eli Roth, I guess. Yeah,
fair enough.
It was very weird.
Okay, yeah, but we're not here to talk about the Green Inferno, Mike. We're here to talk about Mom and Dad.
In this essay, I will... Oh, okay.
Yeah, when we get to the Eli Roth podcast, that we're obviously going to do.
It's just the clock in the wall, House of the Clock in the Walls 100 times.
I'm in. I mean, that was a pretty good movie. Anyway.
I heard.
Anyway, any other thoughts about Mom and Dad you wanted to get out there, Mike, before we wrap this thing up?
No, I think we went through all the good times.
Yeah, there were a lot of good times, a lot of gory things, a lot of fun, ridiculous Cage line readings. Again, Cage and Selma Blair, great together.
Yeah.
Hope to see them together again at some point. Honestly, like, I would love Cage to just keep making movies with Brian Taylor Neville Dean Taylor team, because they're so well-suited for each other. And I just want more stuff like that. I want more Ghost Rider 2s. I want more Mom and Dads. Give me that stuff.
And Panos Cosmatos.
Yes. Yeah, more Panos Cosmatos stuff would be great, too. I mean, from what I understand, the new movie that he's in, which is directed by Richard Stanley, Color Out of Space, it's apparently going to be more like... It's based on an H.P. Lovecraft novella, and it sounds like it's going to be really crazy, heady sci-fi stuff, and I'm very excited about it.
Nice. Oh, I actually do want to mention real quick, only because it's oddly familiar to another scene that involves a comedic bullet removal, like in Game Night.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Where after Selma Blair gets shot, there's like a whole scene where Cage is like, I don't know, how do we get the bullet out? And they're like, oh, fuck it, just wrap it up or whatever.
Right.
And reminded me of that scene in Game Night.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
Which I think also came out in 2018?
Yes. Yeah, no, 2018 is what came out.
There you go. Ripping off Mom and Dad.
Yeah. What? Mom and Dad got there first. That's what that January release date does, baby. All right. So it sounds like we're about wrapping things up on this Mom and Dad episode, Mike. So let's hear what the Letterboxd people have to say. Here we go. We got reviews from Letterboxd. A 3.5-star review right now from Mom and Dad, which reads, adults coming to terms with midlife mediocrity, rebellious children picking up the mantle once owned by their parents, and Nicolas Cage with Fruit Loops and glass stuck to his face, brandishing a Sawzall. Let's be honest. Academy Award winner Nicolas Cage is one of the best actors of his generation. We can stop pretending he isn't because we like Daniel Day-Lewis, too. It's okay to like The Crucible and Drive Angry, and it's okay to admit it.
Nice. Did you write that, Mike? That sounds like you.
I did not, but I agree with the sentiment, and that's why I put it in there. Here's a 2.5-star review, which is actually from Tasha Robinson, a really great film critic as well. She wrote, there's the good Nicolas Cage and the bad Nicolas Cage, the one who shows up and delivers serious drama, and the one who barely shows up at all. And then there's the terrific Nicolas Cage, who shows up, eats all the scenery, vomits it back up, and dances wildly around in the mess. This movie has the terrific Nicolas Cage, but also a surprisingly smart premise, turning the frustration parents have with the kids into a sudden, overwhelming biological urge to murder them. It's a little like The Happening in that regard, if The Happening was actively fun to watch, instead of hilariously awful. This is not a great movie, but it is absolutely a great time at the movies. That was Tasha Robinson with Mom and Dad. Here's a 3.5-star review from Mom and Dad, which reads, this movie is fiercely its own thing, and it's impossible to say it's poorly directed or poorly realized. Nick Cage is at his absolute 100% meme peak here, and Selma Blair is actually really fucking great. I saw this at Midnight Madness with a packed crowd and Nick Cage 3 rows behind me.
What?
Yeah, this was at Toronto International Film Festival, I believe. Thunderous cheering every time Cage says something insane, a drunk, bizarre Q&A from Cage afterwards. He autographed my denim jacket, and I feel like a fashion icon now. I'm afraid this will be the only acceptable way to watch this movie from now on for me.
Fair. This would be great in a midnight movie.
Oh my god, it would be so awesome. Here's a 2-star review of Mom and Dad, which reads, it's really half a movie, and only half of that is good, and I'm just furious it's not called Mom and Dead. Related, how is there not a movie called Mom and Dead? Which, hey, I get it. That's actually, it's a solid title. He shouldn't just put that out there in the wild. He should have that for his own.
Trademark.
Yeah.
Patent pending.
Exactly. And finally got one more. Here's a 3.5-star review, which reads, Nicolas Cage's adoration for the Sawzall is the best and most genuine relationship of 2018 thus far.
Yeah, I stan. I ship it.
Exactly, which is true. All right. So that is Mom and Dad. A very enjoyable B-movie, VOD, Nicolas Cage stuff, and a great way to kick off the year of our Cage, 2018. For sure. Looking forward to a lot of good stuff. Probably some bad stuff, too. There's 8 movies, so I'm thinking at least a couple of them are probably going to be rough.
They can't all be home runs.
They can't all be home runs. They can't all be mom and dads, but hopefully we'll get... I know for a fact we got a couple of good ones on the way, so looking forward to those. All right, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at MDFilmBlog on Twitter, and you can find me at MDFilmBlog on Letterboxd.
And you can find me at MSmithFilmBlog on Twitter and all of our podcast stuff over at Rapture Press. As well as other podcasts like The Review Zoo and Badass Biz Bitches. You can also find me on Letterboxd as well under Mike Smith Film. Thank you so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith, and that is Mike's Cree Show. If you're listening on iTunes, or even if you're not, make sure to rate and review the show. 5 stars would be nice. And tell people you know about the show if you can. If you want to contact us, you can do so by emailing nicholascagecompleteworks@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. On the next Complete Works, Nicolas Cage joins up with director Tim Hunter, who is mostly known for his TV work on shows like Breaking Bad and Twin Peaks. I was also the director of River's Edge with Keanu Reeves back in the 80s. This is a new thriller called Looking Glass, which I know nothing about. I know nothing about this movie. We will see how it goes.
I think that might be one of the misses.
Ooh, yeah, hey, no, you never know, man. It could be a surprise gem.
A hidden gem, you're right.
A hidden gem, yeah. So Looking Glass is the name of the next movie we'll be talking about. Plus, keep an eye out for the next Mike and Mike Go to the Movies, where I think we had originally said, let's do It Chapter 2. And then I realized It Chapter 2 is coming out a week later than I thought it was. So now I think since we've both seen Ready or Not, we'll probably be talking about Ready or Not. I think that's probably the one to do. Unless some like surprise Netflix release happens this weekend. You know, like 11 Cloverfield Lane or something like that. Like, just...
Yo, don't even play with my heart that way.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. But anyway, thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage.